The general expectation is the unemployment rate will be unchanged at 4.9%.
Offices are adding a lot of jobs, 215,000.
Central tendency of the inflation is 1.5 to 1.6%.
6.3% in March.
Slow growth is coming from slow productivity growth. You know, output per worker has not been growing quickly.
Enough is enough.
Bring back booming economic growth.
The defining economic challenge of our time is clear.
If oil prices don't explain things the way they used to economically, how about China? This week we are seeking clarity to the increasingly complex state of the global economy as part of our series, The 2016 Economic Fog, Finding a Way Forward. China is big, this we know, but the numbers are hard to decipher. Growth rates in China have fallen from 10.6% in 2011 to 6.8% in 2015, and with a rough start to 2016, the country's economic and financial woes have prompted fears of a global recession. Lisa Emsbo Mattingly is director of research in the Global Asset Allocation Group at Fidelity Investments. She says it's not the straight-ahead numbers that worry her. It's China's new capacity to pull the unexpected from its deck.
A lot of surprises coming out of the Chinese economy over the last 6 months. What keeps me awake is how stable the Chinese economy is, what's going to happen with their currency, what are the growth drivers going forward for the Chinese economy.
And where in China is there disposable cash for them to begin investing around the world? We've certainly heard for years about the Chinese holding American debt, but China is actually investing in real assets. And it's not just in, African natural resources. It's in companies in the United States.
I think that comes back to sort of this, to some extent, a trap that China finds itself in. It has a currency that has strengthened over the years, and that certainly improves the ability of Chinese companies to go externally outside of China and buy companies, but it also hampers their competitiveness globally.
You know, I'm old enough to remember the 70s and 80s when the Japanese were making similar kinds of purchases, and there was all this nationalistic talk about how Japan is the strongman economy and that the U.S. is a mess. And in hindsight, that whole Japanese period looked like capital flight. I mean, people were taking capital out of Japan and investing it anywhere but Japan. Is that possibly what's going on in China as well, that there's a concern about investing in China?
Yes, that's definitely one of the concerns. One of the big issues that people have focused on in terms of Chinese holdings has been, as you mentioned, the very big holdings of U.S. treasuries in their foreign reserves. That's to maintain that stable currency versus the U.S. dollar. But over the last year, those reserves have fallen quite considerably. And from the peak of almost $4 trillion in foreign reserves, they're down to about $3.2 trillion. So we've seen a lot more money exiting the Chinese economy than entering over the last year.
Looking ahead 50 years, what do you think China will have had the most influence on? A continuing presence in manufacturing or something radically different?
I do think that there is potential, and the key word is potential, for the Chinese to become very dynamic in their financial services industry. Every year when I go back to China, whether it's internet finance or investment trusts or wealth management products, every year there's an entire new industry that's created in China. Some of that is going to not end well, but I do think that they probably are at the very front end of quite a bit of innovation in finance.
Is the U.S. insulated from a Chinese downturn?
I would argue that we've already seen a Chinese downturn, and it certainly has affected the global economy. The U.S. manufacturing sector has been impacted, I think. The U.S. dollar has been impacted by all of those changes that we've already seen coming out of China. But the U.S. does not appear to be going into recession as a result.
Lisa Emsbo Mattingly is director of research in the Global Asset Allocation Group at Fidelity Investments. Thanks so much, Lisa.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
China's size makes it difficult to imagine the realities of doing business there sometimes. Brian Yu is founder and CEO of Business Connect China, where from Beijing, he helps investors and corporations, both foreign and domestic, to better understand China and its market potential. He says while the rest of the world wrings their hands over the Chinese economy, he only sees progress over the past decade.
Right now, it's much easier to do business in China than, let's say, 10 or even 20 years ago, because the government control over the economy has been weakened. And then the private economy is really sort of taking off. Particularly, this is good news for the media and the small-sized business, if it's a kind of a foreign business, because in the past, you always has to do business with state-owned enterprise or need support from the government. And now things have changed a lot.
As a business person, do I want access to the consumer market in China? Is that what I'm really going for? Or do I want access to the technical expertise and the manufacturing expertise in China?
If this question is asked, let's say, about 5 years ago, I would say China was more in this manufacturing, made in China, global factory. But things also have changed. The consumer economy is really taking off. In 2015, we did see the booming of the consumer power because the emerging of the huge, huge middle class in China, according to the statistics, is exceeding 100 million. I would say now is really a good time to tap into this market. And also the interesting difference between now and, let's say, 5 years ago is that this consumer economy is really sort of segmented at the geographic level and also at the, let's say, age level. So this is actually good news for those small brands in the U.S. because they can cater into some specific needs in specific segments, and then they have a better winning chance in China than in the past.
What if I wanted to come to China and start a rock band?
Wow. Rock band is in the, let's put it into cultural industry, and
right.
Also this is media related.
Yep.
In this aspect, I would say overall cultural industry is taking off, but if it's related to media, let's say people opinions, I don't think they are really doing that well than the other industries. Some of the popular music, if it's not like so opinionated or it's not like anti, you know, government or those kind of bands, I mean, they are really, really doing well.
How hard was it for you to set up your own business, Business Connect China?
My business has been 7 years now. It's been pretty easy. And I don't have much interference or relationship with the government, but I do observe the laws and the regulations, and I need to be very sensitive in terms of what's the changes in the government control, in terms of scrutiny, in terms of how you gather information. So I'm fully aware of all this kind of environment. So overall, 7 years, I don't have any difficulty in terms of working with the government.
Brian Yu, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for talking with me.
Brian Yu is CEO and founder of Business Connect China. He's got a bright outlook for China, but the Chinese won't be reading about the Panama Papers anytime soon. China appears to be censoring social media posts on the leak, which has named several members of the Chinese elite, including the brother-in-law of President Xi Jinping.
NYC Now delivers the most up-to-date local news from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. With three updates a day, listeners get breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from across New York City. By sponsoring programming like NYC Now, you'll reach our community of dedicated listeners with premium messaging and an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to get in touch and find out more.